Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, federal charges filed against a former South Carolina cop accused of killing Walter Scott. He has been indicted on those federal charges. We'll talk about that. Also hear from the Scott's family attorney about what this means for this particular case. Also, breaking news out of Florida. Scumbag George Zimmerman announces he will sell the gun he used to kill unarmed teen Trayvon Martin. And wait until we tell you who he wants to benefit from the proceeds. Also, alarming news regarding HIV/AIDS in Black America as the epidemic in Atlanta is compared to that of a third world country. Also, what is going on with Black AIDS organizations in demanding a shift in the resources to benefit those who are most affected? We'll break it down with our panel. Also, fibroids. Serious problem for African-American women. Upwards of 90 to 100% of Black women are impacted by fibroids. What is causing this? How can we assist Black women in ending this epidemic? We'll talk to a fibroid and fertility coach about the various risk symptoms and what they believe the cause is. Also, it's What the Hell Thursday. So you know we got some crazy stories to break down. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One.
They tried to cover it up again, but it's time that the cover was pulled. And I thank God that my son was the one that was used to pull the cover off of all the violence and the cover-ups and all that has been going on.
That is the mother of Walter Scott reacting to the news that the former South Carolina cop accused of killing her son is now facing federal charges. Wednesday, a federal grand jury indicted former officer Michael Slager on 3 charges. Walter Scott's shooting gained national attention for a variety of reasons, shot and killed while running away during a traffic stop in North Charleston, South Carolina on April 4, 2015. The shooting was caught on cell phone video. Slager's account of the story had a number of inconsistencies. He is charged with deprivation of rights under color of law. That means Slager violated Scott's constitutionally protected civil rights by shooting him. He's also charged with use of a weapon during commission of a crime of violence and obstruction of justice. The indictment alleges Slager intentionally misled investigators by claiming Scott was coming toward him with a taser when in truth Scott was running away. Also, folks, remember these are federal charges. Slager is charged with murder in state court and is free on bond. His state trial is set for October 31st. Joining us on the phone right now is L. Chris Stewart, the attorney for the Scott family. Also in the studio, Rashad Robinson, executive director of Color of Change. Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver, leadership strategist for the Exceptional Leadership Institute for Women, and Ralph Chittums, senior vice chairman for the D.C. Republican Party. Chris, when you look at these particular charges here, obviously they're different from the state charges. The feds could have waited for the state case to conclude, but clearly they felt this was important to file these charges now.
Yeah, you know, we've been working with them and in discussions with them from the very beginning. We didn't know what they were going to do. Of course, you know, when they called their grand jury, it's secret, so they don't even tell us what's going on. But we knew they were seriously investigating it. And, you know, recently we met with them and found out what was going on. And, you know, like I said, my jaw dropped.
And when you talk about these particular charges, they chose not to simply say that Slager violated his constitutional rights.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest sign is that they're serious. You know, they threw in the gun charge, which is an additional 10 years if convicted, on top of whatever he gets for the other charges. You know, and I have to salute, you know, Vanita Gupta, who heads up the Civil Rights Division for DOJ, and Bill Nettles, who's the U.S. Attorney in South Carolina. It's a guts to do this, and I think it's a sign of change.
Chris, let me ask you this question here. What also jumps out at me, if you look at the other cases out there, the DOJ actually moved a lot quicker in this case than others. I mean, we waited 2-3 years for some of these cases for the DOJ to actually make some kind of decision.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, the Walter Scott situation, it needs to become the beacon of how DOJ is going to take these cases, because even in those situations, they investigated but didn't indict. This situation could be a big turning point, which is why people really have to rally behind it and support this decision.
All right, then, Chris Stewart, we certainly appreciate it, man. Thank you so very much.
I'm
going to go to our panel here. Rashad, your thoughts about these federal charges.
I think it's incredibly important. We've been calling for federal charges in so many of these situations where you know that the state is not going to do what they're supposed to do. But I think this also represents the importance of why elections matter and why appointments and who has positions matters. For years, the role of Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights was laid vacant. And they couldn't get someone in that role. They didn't have an appointment. And so for the last year,
the president appoints someone, Senate chose to vote them down.
Absolutely. And so we didn't have someone in the office. Finally, we get someone in this office that can have someone under them. There is some leadership there. And now you're actually seeing results over the last couple of weeks with many different type of announcements from a civil rights perspective coming from DOJ. So that's incredibly important, especially as we head into this election cycle, that people realize that while it's important what happens at the top of the ticket, all these positions of authority throughout our government have a huge role in the impact on our lives every single day.
You know, I was really excited to see these charges. This is exactly what we need as a country. We need some accountability when things like this happen. You know, I am so glad to see that finally we have someone at DOJ who has the authority and has the gumption and has the bravery, frankly, to bring charges like this, because quite frankly, they have been long overdue.
Ralph, it's very interesting. We look at this particular case. You think about earlier this week, we talked to the Chicago Tribune, did an investigation, the detailed massive lying by cops on the federal witness stand. And it's very interesting to me when you won't hear the likes of a Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, and the rest of these folks talking about this sort of deal. They won't talk about the lying of the police officers. This is an example where you can criticize Black Lives Matter all you want to. You can criticize folks who are protesting. But if you don't have that sort of massive attention on these cases, frankly, you're not going to have the kind of follow-up that's needed when it comes to by DAs, also by DOJ.
Well, that's one reason why I like you, Roland, because you bring common sense Republicans on your show who will say flat out that if a cop lies and shoots somebody in the back, that cop needs to be prosecuted, period, end of discussion, let's move. You know, I mean, that's a moot point. Now, what Hannity and O'Reilly and the rest of those guys do, that's a problem that the Republican Party has in reaching out to a broader base and to a broader community, because they don't want to deal with the reality that you do have a black ops site in Chicago where people were black bagged, you know, and just disappeared. You know, these are issues that are real. These are issues that need to be spoken to. They need to be addressed. And, you know, I'm encouraged, because what we have now with this proliferation of cell phones and GoPro cameras, you know, absent that video evidence, these lying, I don't even want to call him a cop because he's not a cop. I don't know what to call him. I can't say it on television.
Thugs.
Yeah. That's good.
Just we call anybody else thugs. We'll just call him thugs.
Right. Yep. He's exactly a thug. You know, these folks need to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, whether it be at the federal level, state level, put them in a jail, put them under a jail. Everybody deserves justice. Period.
But time and time again, we actually haven't had justice. And so the importance of the federal government stepping in here is because in places around the country, even where we've had video, even where we've had deep evidence, grand juries and juries have come back and said, no, no indictment. Tamir Rice, that child, in the park, no indictment. And so the importance of the federal government
First of all, the feds haven't even announced anything on Tamir Rice case. We're still waiting on them to say something.
Eric Garner as well.
Eric Garner. So we've had video over and over again. So I hear you on the video piece, but if we don't have strong outside movements, pushing and holding institutions accountable, going to the polls and kicking district attorneys out of office, we actually don't get this type of change.
Let's deal with another despicable story, this time out of Florida. This idiot George Zimmerman is back in the news. He announces he is going to auction the 9mm gun he used to kill Trayvon Martin in 2012. Zimmerman says he hopes to raise $5,000 from tomorrow's auction. And folks, he wants the money to be used to fight Black Lives Matter, what he calls violence against law enforcement officers, which, I'm sorry, where has that taken place? He also wants to ensure the demise of Angela Corey, who served as the special prosecutor of his case and also battled Hillary Clinton's anti-firearm rhetoric. During a phone interview with Orlando's WOFL News, Zimmerman explained his reasoning for the auction.
And I thought it's time to move past the firearm. And if I sell it and it sells, I move past it. Otherwise, it's going in a safe for my grandkids and never to be, you know, used or seen again.
So you put it in a safe for your grandkids versus destroy it if you don't want to be used again. And once Trayvon Martin's family heard the news, they issued the following statement. Quote, the Trayvon Martin Foundation is committed to its mission of ending senseless gun violence in the United States. This election season, we are laser focused on furthering that mission. As such, the foundation has no comment on the actions of that person. Folks, for one, look, one, he's an SOB and he's sick.
He's Zimmerman
evil.
Needs to go back into whatever hole it is that he lives in, disappear from public sight, and forget about his 15 minutes of infamy.
He can't help himself, though. He can't help. He's going to continue to milk it out. I don't believe for 1 minute. I think that he's using the charge that he's going to donate the money to fight Black Lives Matter as a ruse to sort of make the funds go up. I don't believe it for 1 minute. I think that he's personally wants to subsidize his lifestyle off of his infamy, off of his level of evilness. And this man is just... I just can't even speak to how evil this person is.
It's not just George Zimmerman, though. It's the culture around George Zimmerman that defended him. The folks like that you mentioned, O'Reilly and Hannity. It's the culture of right-wing politics that stood beside him, organizations like the NRA and others. It's the larger culture. George Zimmerman does not get to exist and is not free if there's not a larger culture that supports that and allowed that to happen. I do want to say one thing, though. George Zimmerman and I do agree on one thing, that we have to get rid of Angela Corey for different reasons. but a broken clock is right, you know, twice a day. And George Zimmerman, you know, for all the wrong reasons, wants to get rid of Angela Corey. But she threw that case with George Zimmerman. She prosecuted Marissa Alexander for defending herself. And she's done so many other horrible things that, you know, Color of Change, along with many other organizations, our super PAC, will be doing work this election cycle to get out Angela Corey and a number of other bad DAs around the country.
And we also need to find out who the individuals are that are bidding on this gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that says a lot about them.
Well, again, remember, there are a lot of people who gave thousands of dollars for his legal defense fund, and they were backing him big time in that as well.
Which he didn't pay his lawyers
with. I'm hoping like Anonymous or some of those internet activists dig in and discover who's bidding on the gun. And we expose them, we expose where they work, who they're associated with, and we call them out for who they are.
All right, then going to our next story, Ralph, first of all, thank you so very much, folks. Coming up on News One Now, what's going on when it comes to the funding of HIV/AIDS? When it comes to African Americans, of course, we talked about this a couple of months ago. When it comes to the numbers, one in two black men who are gay or bisexual are projected to get AIDS by the CDC. One in four Hispanics, one in 11 whites. Why is the money so different? Also, in Atlanta, they're saying that the AIDS crisis there is almost that of a third world country. Folks, we're talking about a United States city. We'll discuss it next on News One Now, TV One, 13 after the hour. Back in a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
While other networks consistently ignore the data when it comes to HIV/AIDS in African Americans, we certainly don't. A new report shows how massive HIV/AIDS is in some neighborhoods in Atlanta. Doctors there are comparing to that of developing African countries. The co-director of Emory University's Center for AIDS Research Center, Dr. Carlos Del Rio, said, quote, downtown Atlanta is as bad as Zimbabwe and other third world countries. Recent studies show that in Atlanta, it is so widespread that doctors and scientists are calling it a massive epidemic. A 2016 prediction from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that 1 in 51 Georgians will contract HIV in their lifetime, making Georgia only second to Louisiana. A 2014 Emory study says that Atlanta is the fifth highest rate of new HIV infections in the country. A variety of factors contribute to this include racial disparities in health care, poverty, and the lack of HIV education, and the lack of funding for education and prevention programs. Joining us via FaceTime from Atlanta is primary care physician Dr. David Malbranch, and also via Skype from New York is the executive director of Sister Love, Dazon Dixon Diallo. Also here in the studio is HIV/AIDS prevention advocate Devin Barrington Ward, behavioral health expert CEO of Black Men's Exchange, Dr. Cleo Monago, president and CEO of the Center for Black Equity, Earl Folks Jr., and also, Avis Jones-DeWeaver stays with us, as well as Rashad Robinson with ColorChange.org. First and foremost, I want to talk about specifically in Atlanta. David, we see these announcements, we see the report, but what has been the reaction from folks there? Are folks marshaling and mobilizing to lay out, to confront this epidemic?
I mean, you don't really see a lot of mobilization going on with regards to like communities. You'll see certain churches, certain community-based organizations getting involved in things. But as far as like this global outrage of what's going on in Atlanta, you don't see that as commonly as you would in other cases. And let me just point out that when we look at these statistics, some of these are estimates. And so they're kind of good splash statistics, but these have been going on, particularly with Black gay and bisexual men, since 2001. So this is absolutely nothing new, but people are gonna act brand new as if this is something that they've never heard
about. So here's what I don't understand. What I don't understand is if someone says this is comparable to Zimbabwe, how in the world leadership in Atlanta is it being mobilized? I don't understand from a political standpoint, from a healthcare standpoint, whether it's churches, whether it's community. That's what I'm not quite understanding. Who should be leading the charge?
Well, I think it has to be a group level. And so there's different levels of people that need to be involved, not only in the community, but then particularly the medical community is one of those things. But when you look at the medical community, it's not going to be representative of the epidemic. So you see, especially when we talk about some of the statistics in Grady Hospital and some of the things in downtown Atlanta, most of the providers and researchers that are doing the work and treating and trying to prevent HIV infection are non-Black personnel. And so there's a disconnect sometimes with cultural competency, plus some relationship building as far as looking at someone across the table and saying, this could be my aunt, this could be my uncle, this could be my brother, this could be my father. And so I think there's a general level of apathy. And then I know that Devin and probably some of your other panelists will talk about the policy levels, but in the state of Georgia, it's a very red state. So when you look at these things, you've seen funding being slashed and cut for HIV services. You know that Georgia is one of those states that won't expand Medicaid so that it can participate in the Affordable Care Act. And about 74% of people in Atlanta are going to fall into that kind of coverage gap where they make too much money to get covered by things, but too little to get some of the services that they need. And so when you look at some of these things, it's multi-level, but typically when you talk about the media, it's gonna be focused on Black people. It's gonna be focused on how we're having sex without condoms more than other groups, which is not true. How we're not mobilizing, how we're not getting tested more than other groups, which is not true. Black people get tested more often than any other racial group in America. The problem is some of these systematic forces from a policy level, from an institutional level, and within the medical community itself are part of the problem.
Well, Devin, this is what I need to understand. Again, if we're talking about what has been described as a massive epidemic, When someone says there's an epidemic, folks respond accordingly to epidemics by marshaling resources, marshaling people. When we had the initial study that came out that talked about 1 in 2 black, gay, or bisexual men, 1 in 4 Hispanics, 1 in 11 whites, I said on this show, I said, okay, fine, we're going to come back in 30 days so I can get a status report on what the hell is going on.
So there's been work going on in the ground in Atlanta from a policy perspective for quite some time. The problem is that we really need leaders to get skin in the game.
Okay, you say leaders. Who?
I would start with black legislators. So many of the black legislators in Metro Atlanta, they represent districts that are the hardest hit by the HIV epidemic. And so if that means that we need to work across the aisle until there is a change in party leadership down under the Gold Dome in order to get more funding, to get more resources down there and some of the hot zone areas, and that's what needs to be done.
So here's my question. Who's marching on them? Who's protesting? Who's pushing them? Who's hitting them with emails and tweets. I need to understand where is the campaign and the mobilization to put pressure to move people to action?
You have organizations like Southerners on New Ground. You have organizations like Black Lives Matter chapter in Atlanta that has put pressure on legislators, on the governor, on even the mayor to have more funding to make sure that this is a top priority. But really, I think this needs to be a voting issue in 2016. We need to encourage the message that voting to end HIV is important.
Cleo?
Roland, we're talking about black men. Sometimes for people subconsciously separate same-gender loving and bisexual black men from the pool of black men. But we're talking about black men. And the reason that I illuminate that is because black men historically in this country have not been affirmed, been properly attended to regarding health challenges and other challenges, and have pretty much been warehoused and stigmatized. So that tendency in this culture is impacting HIV and AIDS. There is no alarm around this issue. Now they're saying it's like Zimbabwe. Well, 15 years ago, they said sub-Saharan Africa. Right. Like David said, this is a retread. It's the same thing. But mm-hmm. but let's get clear here. We're going into some more decades of paralysis and a backdrop of not really having great care for this particular population. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, Devin talked about policy. Look, there's been policy. There's been funding. There's been other ways in which we're supposed to deal with this issue. But the bottom line is that we're dealing with a community that's dealing with internalized oppression mm-hmm. and dealing with second-guessing their own worth. I mean, we keep talking about holding people accountable. Well, the community that's at risk, that are part of statistics, are not stepping up and say, wait a minute, right. How dare you allow me to be neglected? How dare you allow me to get HIV? The community itself right. is not alarmed. And that has to do with some issues of depression, internalized oppression, and internalizing this society's implication that we're not that valuable.
Earl?
You know what? There's no community will. There's no community will to stop this pandemic. We can stop diseases. We can stop teenage pregnancy. From 1991 to 2013, there was a 61% drop in teenage pregnancies. The fact of the matter is that the government, the community, and those people impacted received the funding and the support to reduce teenage pregnancy. It's the same mode of you get pregnant by having sex, the same way you get HIV. So the fact is, if you have the will to do it, forces, Republicans and Democrats and religious leaders will come up forward and say, this has to be done. That has never happened.
So Rashad and Avis, and then also, haven't forgot about you, Dazon. What I'm struggling is, okay, where's the campaign? Well, I'm trying to understand. I'm real simple on some stuff. And that is, if I hear one thing, mm-hmm. the first thing I say is, okay, where's the response?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there needs to be a response. And I do think that, you know, to the extent that it can be about voting, but if people are not feeling the pressure, you know, black people vote at high numbers already. Black people voted to put a black person in presidency and we didn't get all the things. So it simply can't be about voting. I do think it has to be about the translating the presence of these issues into the power that forces people out of office for it. But, you know, as a person who is not working on this issue every single day, you know, I think that this is a wake-up call and an ongoing wake-up call for all of us that in the vast range of issues that we we have to be working on, the lives, the health, the future of our community. We have nothing if we don't have the ability to actually live.
Some of the most iconic people in black history and in world history have HIV. Magic Johnson is living with HIV. The first black anchor person to have a national show, Max Robinson, died of AIDS. We have Arthur Ashe. We have Eazy-E. So we have all of these alarms that's saying, look, you in particular are impacted. But what we have to face is a nation and a community that's internalized being in question about the value of black men. I mean, children are getting HIV. Excuse me, when you talk about, I'm sorry, let me just say this real quick. When you talk about birth control, that's not necessarily a discarded community. So people put priority on that community. There was an article in New York Times recently that said black men are being pushed out, black men are disappearing. There was no alarm about that. This is a category of black people called black men that are in that group of people that are discarded and not cared about.
Avis, I'm going to a break, and Deza, I'm going to come back to you at the beginning of the break. Avis, what's your comment? Go ahead.
Well, I'll have to come back at the beginning. It's too much to do really quick.
All right, so let me quickly take a break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. But I still, because when we come back, this is what I want to know. To everybody who's listening, who? What's the organizations? Who should be driving this? Who are the dominant black AIDS organizations that should know? I want names, and I want to know the plan, because I'm not going to have the same conversation in 60 days. 26 after the hour, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
Welcome back. We continue our discussion about HIV/AIDS prevention in America, but specifically black America. I want to go to Avis, then to Dazon, to get in on this conversation. Again, I don't like going round and round. I'm about where do we start, who's the organizations, who's leading this, who's organizing, who's mobilizing. Avis, your comment.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of organizations, and I will get to that, but I have to raise the point that this is not just a black male issue. Of all the women who are impacted by HIV, black women make up two-thirds of that number. And so I think when we erase black women, we do the black community a big disservice when we talk about HIV. This is a space that I worked in tremendously when I was at NCNW. That organization still works on it. There are a number of organizations that still work on it within the black community, but I would say that they have largely been underfunded and neglected by the CDC in terms of the CDC's priorities. Recently, they have been draining money out of black organizations in favor, let me just be very frank here, in favor of organizations that focus on the white male gay community, which is not the primary community, instead of focusing on organizations that focus on black men. So they're taking money out of the black community to focus on this issue within the white community, where it's going down in the white community and it's continuing to be at epic proportions within the black community. I question the priorities of the CDC. They are right in Atlanta. What are they doing in terms of the funding? Whatever they're doing with the funding, they're not doing it in a way that addresses this issue to the degree that it needs to be addressed.
Dazon?
Yeah, I want to absolutely echo Avis and add to that it is about black community. And there are a couple of other issues that I would call on. It is about the CDC, but across the South, including in the state of Georgia, there has never been, I think, I've been doing this work almost 30 years, we have yet to see a dollar go into the state line item budget to go towards HIV prevention or into HIV care other than Medicaid dollars. And of course, you know, without Medicaid expansion, that's leaving out all kinds of single people, including young black men and black women as well. So it's about black men, it's about black women, it's about black children, and even in the state of Georgia, where we should not be having any perinatal transmissions, we have had some, and it's about black babies as well. There are three things that I wanted to say that sort of buoy exactly what's been said before. It is about leadership. It is about, you know, sounding the alarm. And I want to say this. We got to get woke. Black folks need to be woke. It's the stigma goes along with the internalized depression. Where we saw so much activism in the early days of the epidemic, it was mostly gay white men and their allies. I was one of them. That we were able to mobilize and move things out of the anger of the disrespect and the neglect that was being showed toward people with HIV and AIDS. Well, in our community, we live more with the stigma and the shame around HIV and AIDS than we are angry. And I don't know how people mobilize and organize and protest out of shame and out of stigma. I mean, it just doesn't happen that way.
Right.
We've got to get people angry. We've got to get them angry. And the thing that I wanted to add, though, is that when you sound the alarm, you got to wake up and stay woke. We sounded the alarm a couple of years ago, especially in Fulton County, when we learned that our black female director of health for the District of Fulton County has somehow managed to oversee neglect and the return of over $9 million in the state in Fulton County of HIV prevention funding. And we had to fight to get just half of that back. And now we're still talking about where the epidemic is worse now than it was even 2 years ago. So there's that. We have a black male leader of the HIV program at the state health department who, if he doesn't do more, has to go. So there's a lot of stuff where it's about us figuring out how to get angry about this, because when we do get mad, we get moving. And if we're not mad, we stay still. And that's what's been happening in terms of the what's going on in Georgia.
All right. So what I want to know, David, Devin, Earl, Rashad, Cleo, Dazon, Avis, all y'all, I want to know, okay, if you look at any particular issue that there are organizations that are supposed to be leading the effort. Okay. Who are they? Where are they? And where, then what's next?
When it comes to HIV prevention.
Cleo, can I just say that as the director of a local black HIV/AIDS organization, working in partnership with groups like NASEM, we have Sister Love, we have Anise Inc., we have a number of organizations in Atlanta that, you know, like Ava said, have been draining have been drained of a lot of dollars, and we're just trying to put our finger in the dike and deal with people who show up on our doorsteps.
But see,
organizations that have the capacity to mobilize NAACP, the SCLC locally, the faith-based organizations that will mobilize around everything except HIV in our
Dazon, here's why I'm asking the question, though. If you say, if you're trying to, who's leading the effort in journalism? National Association of Black Journalists. I'm not going to say NAACP. If you're talking about who's doing something when it comes to business, U.S. Black Chambers, Inc., I'm not going to say National Urban League. So what I'm saying is, within the context of black, gay, same gender loving community, within the context of black HIV/AIDS, who are the national organizations who should be driving this from a national perspective and then also aligning and partnering with local people?
When you heard the statistics, Roland, this emergency in terms of one in two black men are going to get HIV, supposedly, who called you? You are the leader of the black media press in this
country. Nobody called me.
Nobody called you.
I saw it myself.
Well, I called you, though, didn't I?
Well, no, that's you, right. I saw the story, and then when you hit me up, I said absolutely.
So that shows you there's no leadership. There was some leadership. That leadership would have saw that article and said, well, hey, Roland, look, this is a black issue. You represent the black press. What are we going to do? The bottom line is that there is no black affirming leadership. The HIV movement was designed by white gays, and then they allowed black men who like them to take the baton for black people, and black people have not had black people who like black people in charge of this issue. When white homosexuals that Dazon was working with were trying to save their people, those white men were not in question about the value of white men. They were real clear. We're going to live. We ain't having this. We don't have that kind of advocacy that's being allowed. There's been people like myself who have that perspective in terms of the value of black people who've been constantly poo-pooed and called angry and called all these kind of words instead of intelligent human being who has a perspective that could help black people. There's been a lot of bias
David,
going on
David, one second.
Here.
David, go ahead.
Yeah, what I wanted to say was that there are a lot of community-based organizations, and here in Atlanta, there's National AIDS Education Service for Minorities, NAESM. There's a national organization called the Young Black Gay Leadership Initiative, which actually does a lot of work. There's the Black AIDS Institute, which actually put out a report years ago that talked about if Black America was its own country, it would be eligible for international PEPFAR relief. One of the things that people are missing, and I'm a medical provider, I'm a member of the medical community. What you do need to understand with this is that HIV is not the urgent crisis. People don't see folks dying on respirators, in hospitals, and sick day in and day out. What we're seeing is a management of it into a chronic disease. And let's be clear, this is not a community-based driven approach anymore. This is a biomedical approach. And when you look at the biomedical approaches, not only do you have researchers that are predominantly white, you have physicians and physician assistants and nurse practitioners and medical providers who are also that. We are talking about the biomedicalization of HIV. And when you look at that community, it's not going to be representative of the statistics. There are not that many of us who are medical providers, who are researchers, who are doing the work on the ground every day. We need more of us to do this. And we need to stop looking at the CDC as something to save us. And
I got you. David, Dazon, 1 second. First of all, folks, literally, I have 60 seconds because I have to get to our next topic dealing with black women in fibroids. Final comment, real quick, Earl.
I think until our community realizes the value
of black
people.
Thank you.
Black people, until we realize the importance of black males' lives, especially same-gender-loving and gay men, we're not going to get any headway in this into defeating this disease.
Devin?
You have to make it a voting issue in 2016. If you're not holding the elected leaders accountable on this issue, if you're not asking directly Hillary Clinton, your gubernatorial candidates, your candidates
don't
that are running
Donald
for mayor,
Trump.
Donald Trump, whoever is running to lead at whatever capacity, from president all the way down to dog catcher, it has to be a voting issue in 2016.
Rashad.
I think this is once again a question of both leadership and electoral power and building the power of the community.
Avis.
I think really this issue of stigma is a real issue, and that's hampering our ability as a community to face this head on as the epidemic that it is.
Cleo.
I can't say what I want to say. I'll just say this. The black community has issues with same-gender-loving people. And the NAACP and these other organizations, and there's exceptions to all of this, have second-guessed the idea of getting behind saving the lives of homosexual black men. And that cognitive distance, if you will, that's going on in our community is getting in the way of us getting out in the streets and demanding that we get to live.
Dazon.
And HIV is more than a virus. It is a human rights issue. It is a social justice issue, which is why we need more than HIV/AIDS leaders calling the claret, sounding the alarm. And we are meeting with Secretary Clinton this afternoon, along with other AIDS allies.
Okay.
And we are also calling on Senator Sanders, as well as Donald Trump, to have meetings with the community.
Got
as
it. David, real quick, literally 15 seconds.
We are the answers we are looking for, and I want to call the medical community to the carpet on this. We need to actually go into these medical facilities and demand more from the medical providers that are providing the prevention and treatment services for HIV.
Got it. All right, folks, thank you so very much. We appreciate it. What is going on when it comes to black women and the issue of fibroids? Why are they at a higher risk than everyone else? Anywhere from 90 to 100%. We'll break it down with a fertility as well as author. Next, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
If you know a black woman, it's a good bet she has had an issue with fibroids, ranging from the size of an apple seed to a grapefruit. Fibroids are muscular tumors that grow on the wall of the uterus, and they are almost always benign. 70% of white women and 90% of black women have had fibroids by age 50. More than 200,000 hysterectomies are performed each year for uterine fibroids. An annual director of healthcare cost for uterine fibroids exceeds $2.1 billion. Despite the bleak stats, a team of medical specialists have helped some women beat the odds with a new fibroid fighting plan. It's called the 90-Day Hope Beyond Fibroids Elimination Program. Joining me now is the program's creator, Jesse Thompson, fibroid and fitness coach and author of the book, Hope Beyond Fibroids. Also, her program partners with folks as well, Dr. Amsu Anpu, correct? Did I say that correct? All right, then. And Dr. Amo Neb. Got it? All right, cool. Just checking with the Aboriginal Medical Association and co-authors of the book, Got Fibroids, the Fibroid Elimination Bible, and also on the program is patient LaToya Ryan. How you doing? All right, so this is, we talk about 90%.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Wow. I mean, that is a tremendous number.
Mm-hmm.
And so talk about that from an African-American standpoint, how black women are having to deal with that.
The question is, how are they dealing with it?
Yes.
Well, right now, the truth is, you know, as you know, my story went viral. It set me on this path as an author, women's health speaker, and a coach. I kept finding that one thing, as I'm helping them navigate the emotional and the spiritual issues, is the doctors I'm referring to them to, they're only offering them surgery. And guess what? The surgery wasn't actually a real solution because the fibroids kept coming back. When I was here before, I told you my story. My fibroids, I had 5 fibroid surgeries because they kept coming back. Here I was saying, you know what, Roland? this is something's got to change. It can't just be that they're having surgeries and the surgeries are only a temporary solution because the fibroids are going to come back. And as I started to seek purely, truthfully for a cure, I became aware of the work that the AMA doctors, Dr. Amsu Ampu and Dr. Amu Neb were doing. They're also, as you said, authors of the book, Got Fibroids. They were having success with women actually changing their lifestyles and eliminating fibroids. But the big thing was that, you know, we saw that there was a gap between what we were, I was offering and what they were offering.
Yes, they want to go to you in terms of how long have you deal with fibroids?
I was diagnosed with uterine fibroids in November 2015. I drove myself to the emergency room because I was dealing with excruciating pain. It was very hard for me to walk comfortably, to drive comfortably. And that very same day, they diagnosed me with uterine fibroids and ovarian cyst. Ever since then, I've been doing research. I lucked up with finding the 90-day Hope Beyond Fibroids, program, elimination program. And I started the program January 1, and in March, I am fibroid free.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Doc, I want to go to you in terms of, again, part of the issue is that, I mean, I've talked to a number of black women, doctors say they have no idea. They have no idea what they say is the cause. They don't know how to treat it. And they pretty much tell any woman, okay, fine, we're just going to go straight to surgery.
That's right.
And a lot of black women are saying, look, I can't get appropriate answers.
Well, first of all, you know, the information that has been given so far has been incorrect because the root cause is estrogen dominance, and they know this. It's absolutely known. There's so many research white papers on the matter. You know, if you just Google cause of fibroids, it's going to tell you, you're going to see estrogen, everywhere's estrogen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our thing is to inhibit that estrogen, and that's how we eliminate those fibroids.
Right.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's about money more than your health. Mm-hmm. You know, the amount of money that is made through having surgery, full hysterectomy is, you know, it's in the thousands, millions. So when you get a patient like Latoya going in and getting diagnosed with uterine fibroids, the first thing they want to guide you to or push you towards is a full hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. So what we are bringing is just an alternative of, well, you have options and you have a natural way of eliminating these fibroids.
And also there's a setup. A lot of black women, young black women, teenagers, they're given the menstrual, you know, the estrogen pill, the contraceptive pill to regulate their cycles. And that is the setup.
Wow.
Say that.
That's exactly what my prior doctor tried to do to me. He offered me estrogen pills, birth control pills, and it feeds fibroids.
It feeds fibroids.
And it's medications, and it's also food, it's stress. See, these are the key things. It's really, our focus now is educating women about now, guess what? Your health is not in your doctor's hands. It's in your hands,
absolutely.
And you can change your lifestyle. We have a free teleseminar we make available to every woman. Sign up at hopebeyondfibroids.com/elimination. And guess what? You now can learn, A, the root cause, how it's developed in your body, how you acquire it.
So what should women be looking for?
They should be looking for, in terms of where
in terms
is estrogen?
Of symptoms.
Oh, symptoms. Everything from bloating to excruciating pain to irregular periods. Women live with irregular periods, and they're right away, that's an indicator there's something wrong in your body.
Ava, you have a quick question.
Yeah, so, you know, I completely agree that what's going on here is greed within the medical community.
Absolutely.
Are there some basic sort of diet tips? I mean, how much
Absolutely.
Is diet a factor in this?
Much of it is diet, okay? In fact, that's why the biggest thing is women become overwhelmed when you find out where it's in the air that you breathe, it's in the lotions, it's in the food, okay? But what we did when we created this teleseminar is that free information, okay? We want you to get the download. Women tell us over all the time, thank you so much for this information because I'm taking notes. This is an eye opener for me, okay? Spinach, we were on yesterday, women were like, what? Spinach? Yeah, it's a hybrid food. There's literally a whole education that the food industry is set, it's corrupt, it's polluted.
I thought spinach was good for me. No,
but it's a hybrid food. So Dr. Amsu can talk about how it's created, there's bacteria in it, it creates toxins in your body. So again, Download the teleseminar. Get educated. You become empowered about your own health.
And so the information where folks can get it.
HopeBeyondFibroids.com/elimination.
Okay. All right. Well, look, we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much. I hope some folks have been empowered by the information.
Thank you.
It is Thursday. You know, we always have some wild and crazy stories on What the Hell Thursday. We'll go over that. Coming up next, also for the latest news, be sure to go to news1.com. You can also hit me up with your thoughts on this topic and the other discussion we had today on Twitter at Roland S. Martin or at News1, or go to our News1 Now Facebook page, 9 before top of the hour, News1 Now on TV1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Crazy.
Is that crazy? No.
No. Hi, I'm David Banner. Please support my new album, The God Box, and my lecture series, The God Box Lecture Series. Roland does. And he's on News One Now. It's on TV One. Thank you.
Birthday shout out time. Actress Kim Fields turns 47 years old today. Celebrity chef Carla Hall turns 52 years old. Actress Vanessa Williams turns 53. Actor Ving Rhames turns 57 on this day in history, 1898. A grandfather clause is passed in Louisiana to keep black folks from voting. In 1902, Joe Gans becomes the first African American world boxing champion when he knocks out Frank Earn. And in 1955, Samuel Toothpick Jones becomes the first African American to pitch a no-hitter in Major League Baseball. All right, folks, it's every Thursday. We always have What the Hell Thursday with all the wild, unbelievable, crazy stories joining us today. And we have, of course, Lamont King. We have Autumn Joy and Ashley Bougie Demi.
Hi.
All right, folks, just get right to it. There probably isn't a manual on stealing snakes, but if there was one, there definitely wouldn't be in it. Florida man Travis Treader was arrested after he attempted to steal a baby python from a pet store by stuffing it down his pants. Store owners say Treader has successfully stolen animals from them in the past. This time they were able to stop him and keep him in the store until authorities arrived. Okay, I'm just saying, a python, you want to put it in your pants.
Out of all the places.
Do you? Yeah. Why?
But it definitely gives a new definition to a trouser snake. Like, literally, it's a trouser.
Okay.
Okay.
But anywhere you could have put it anywhere, but in the snake pit. You put a snake in your snake pit.
Well, it's a baby python, you know? Maybe he thought it wouldn't bite
that
him.
Needs to go or in your pants like that. Nothing needs to go in your pants. If you want your goods downstairs, nothing needs to go in your pants. It's a hiding spot. No.
Where else could he have put it?
And I love him how he's trying to get him. Dude, they got you. They got you. They got you. And now you're not getting out, player. All right, y'all. Running from the police is never a good idea, especially if you're butt naked. This guy clearly didn't care. The craziest thing is that he wasn't running especially fast, and the police still didn't catch him. Y'all, he is butt naked, running from the car. Y'all, he ain't running, but he's jogging.
Barefoot.
He is jogging from the cops.
He does it all the time.
Every time.
Look at him. Look. Oh, can't get me. Wait a minute. Oh, I'm not chasing after a naked person.
At least he look good doing it. His body look right. Hey.
It's a good reason why they didn't necessarily track him down on foot and then get him with the cars. Because how can you even tackle? What are you going to do? You going to tackle him?
I wouldn't tackle him.
And then his meat slapping you all up. Rib cage.
Or it might have a baby python attached to him.
Yeah. There we go.
He's in shape.
You know they got y'all at the police station. Y'all couldn't catch a butt-naked dude.
No.
He could be slippery.
He's out of breath. Look at the cop. He's out of breath. He's like, look, I just got my donuts.
Then again, it's a little warm, and they got those dark uniforms on, and he's like, hey, I'm free. I'm free.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right, y'all. Kentucky Fried Chicken slogan, finger-licking good, is about to get a whole new meaning. The Hong Kong Marketing Division has just announced they are developing a nail polish that smells and tastes like chicken.
Ooh.
Well, there'll be two different flavors, original recipe and hot and spicy. The Hong Kong KFC says the nail polish is a part of their effort to reach a younger generation. Okay,
I'm with it.
So I was going to say.
I'm with it.
You like that?
I love spicy flavor. I try anything.
What about extra crispy, though? They should have at least
a little
piece. No, they miss the barbecue. That's what they need.
It's
honey
butter.
Rhinestones, the flavored rhinestones.
I try it at least once.
So you're just going to sit there licking your fingers all
day? Yeah, people do it. People do it all the time.
You
why
do
stop
it.
With the chicken?
Those nails.
Keep
you
licking.
Do it.
Lick your fingers.
No, I just
turn
mine off.
You know how sick y'all are?
Well, that's, I would put it on good. My toes.
So what about your sides?
No, I would put it on my toes.
He saw where I was going with that.
Put it on your toes.
I would put it on my toes and have my little boot. No, let me look.
It's only going to make sense if it's the whole meal on your finger. Like, this is the chicken, this is the mashed potatoes, this is the macaroni, you know what I mean?
I'm not down for it.
A little dessert.
A little dessert on your pinky.
A little dessert right here.
Just a little pinky, just a little bit.
Scratch and sniff.
What the hell happened to perfume? I mean, why? I want my woman smelling like chicken.
You would attract a certain type of man, I'm sure, if you smelled like
chicken.
Yeah,
hungry.
You see, there's a lot of people over there in China, Hong Kong, whatever, so they running out of food. So this basically keep you from eating. So if you can suck on your fingers all day.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're solving that.
Right. Okay,
there
we go.
People bite their nails anyway.
Right. And then when your man starts acting like Jeffrey Dahmer, then all of a sudden you can be like, ooh, I used to have two arms, now I only have one arm because he ate my damn arm. Let me go to a break. I'll be back on News One Now with these finger-licking chicken wanting to lick, whatever. Go on to the break.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, back with Lazy Lamont King, Autumn Joy, and Bougie Ashley Demi. All right, then, just because you see somebody do something on the internet doesn't mean you should do it too. Unfortunately, this woman learned that lesson the hard way. The woman was taking part in the Eat Corn with a Drill challenge that's recently gone viral. She must not have gotten the memo about putting hair in a ponytail first.
God. Off on the plug twice.
Oh.
Man. Look at
you are dead.
Right.
I'm bleeding. Ooh, it's bleeding.
Stupid.
I literally.
You are dumb. First of all, you should have had your hair snatched like that for eating corn on a drill.
Yeah.
Well, see, when I first saw, I didn't know what she was about to do with the corn. I seen the drill, I seen the corn. I had no idea she was going for
your
the hair.
Your mind probably went.
How you going to explain? All right. You know what? Good. You know what? I ain't got no problem with her not looking like a fool walking around. Folks like, what happened? What's up? Why you had a big old spot in the middle of your head? Yeah. Oh, I was a fool for eating corn on a drill.
Yeah. I'm surprised she didn't bust out crying. Yeah. I would have, my initial reaction, I would have just saw that bald spot and just would have been in tears.
Yeah, okay, well, show me some black people.
She's too cold.
Yeah, exactly.
But then again, y'all want to lick your fingernails with the Kentucky Fried Chicken collars. So go add the corn to it. I got to go. I'll see y'all tomorrow. Holla!
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.